I think we're just gonna have today and then next week we're gonna finish off on Dush, on this Malacha, which has been taking us a few weeks now. And I think after that we're gonna have two classes on Purim. I think we have two. It'll be two Mondays. I think the two Purim itself is on a Thursday, and then the previous Thursday there's something else going on. So today's class and next week will be the end of Dush. We're gonna sort of shift to halacha lemaisa, to practical applications, but where it's gonna be based off the ideas that we find in the Gemara. At least this class will be. So again, Dush is the prohibition of threshing, and within threshing, we also have the idea of squeezing out liquid from a fruit, because threshing is about the removal of an object that was covered. You have an object which is covered, and revealing that is the prohibition of threshing. That is the prohibition of threshing. And so too, when you squeeze fruit, there is a biblical prohibition to squeeze fruit, because you're extracting the liquid from the fruit. You're removing the liquid from the fruit. So the first source here qualifies this and limits this biblical prohibition significantly. It says, Amar Rav Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Dvar Torah eino chayv ela al drisa zeisim v'anavim belvad. And we've mentioned this in the past also. The only time you have a biblical prohibition when you squeeze out the fruit is when we're dealing with grapes and olives, right? That's when there's a biblical prohibition. Everything else is either completely allowed, it's completely permissible, or it's a rabbinic prohibition, all other fruit. It either falls into the category of completely permissible, or it's just a rabbinic prohibition. But the reason for the rabbinic prohibition is just that we're afraid that you're going to come to squeeze olives and grapes. So that's the only reason for the rabbinic prohibition. So really, on a biblical level, it's completely allowed. So the big question is, why? Why is it allowed for everything else, and why is there only a prohibition when it comes to grapes and olives? Specifically grapes and olives. So I know we have dealt with this in the past, so any suggestions, slash anybody remember anything?
I remember you said that that's what was used in the temple, grapes and olives, olives for the oil and grapes for the wine.
Okay, that is important. I think at the time that we suggested, someone did suggest that in one of the classes, and at that time, we didn't focus on that, but we might be focusing on it today. But
You said that was the norm, right? Was
well,
that?
is that what you're saying? It was the norm, or because it was done in the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Actually, no, I remember now that those are the only fruits that were squeezed in those
Those were
days.
the only fruits.
Oh, that's what
Okay,
you're
that's a
saying.
different. Okay, so this is a different point. So those were the only fruits that were squeezed in those days. And therefore what? Okay, so let's say those were the only fruits that were squeezed. You have grapes and olives. They were squeezed, one for wine and one for the olive oil. So what? Well, who cares about whether the fact that those were the only ones? So, okay, they never squeezed apples to make apple juice. But I want to go ahead and I want to make apple juice. I'm different than everybody else. So what's the problem with that? Why wouldn't that be a biblical prohibition? Or what's the problem with that, but why is that allowed? Why is it specifically the fruits that are common, that were normal to squeeze, as opposed to those that aren't normal? Okay, so that's the question that we're going to be dealing with. And then we'll get to, through answering that question, we'll also get to,
Did we not address this
we
before?
addressed this
I thought we
without
had
looking
two
at it
possible.
inside. We have two possibilities, we didn't look at it inside. So now I only
Okay.
addressed it to get to a different point at the time. So now I want to really focus on those two today.
So just to remind me, this squeezing is really just a subcategory
Of threshing.
of threshing.
This is all under threshing. This squeezing, because just like by threshing, you remove the kernel from the stalk.
Right.
So too over here, you remove the juice from the fruit.
But
Right? You
if kernel
remove
from a
the
stalk is neither an olive or a grape, why is that a problem?
from the stalk.
When you thresh the kernel from the stalk.
Yeah, well, that's not, you're not squeezing juice out in that case. That's just
Removing.
So that's
when
what I'm
it
saying.
comes
So
to when it
it's
comes to removing juice.
right. So this is specifically about juice, not threshing in general.
Not threshing in general. When it comes
Right,
to
okay.
removing
Okay.
juice,
No, yeah, I got
So
confused.
then the only time it applies on a biblical level is with regards to grapes and olives. So there would be two and perhaps three different reasons as to why it's specifically grapes and olives as opposed to anything else. So let's see Rashi. This is the second source here. Rashi says, Dvar Torah. He's commenting on the previous statement, Dvar Torah, that on a biblical level, it's only applying to olives and grapes. So he says, Kolomar, meaning, and just parenthetically, whenever Rashi says Kolomar, he always, I think this is a general rule, whenever he says Kolomar, he's always telling you something which is not the simple explanation. Not the pashup shot. It's not the simple explanation. He's saying Kolomar as if to say this is something else. This is not the simple explanation.
Had a Rebbe that translated Kolomar as crowbar.
As what?
Crowbar. It's like you're trying to, you need a crowbar to like squeeze it into the words.
Okay, exactly.
Is it an actual word or is it an acronym for that?
Kolomar means like as if to say.
As if to say, huh?
It's as if to say, so.
Kolomar.
Here you go. Did you go to Beit Midrash? Did you go to Beit
Midrash? No, I did check my email before setting out.
Okay. Kolomar, as if to say, Asra Torah Melacha. He says, the Torah said it prohibited Melacha. I'm not going to translate Melacha here. Prohibited Melacha. V'dricha zeis v'anavim hu dehava Melacha. And when you squeeze Zeis and Vanavim, grapes and olives, that is Malacha. That is Malacha. Avashar Drichos, but other forms of squeezing, of crushing, Lav Orchayu Bahachi, that is not something which is common or normal. The Lav Malacha Ninhu, and it is not a Malacha. It is not a Malacha. So what exactly is he saying?
What constitutes an activity or a malacha is something that is common, something that's routinely done by the people doing it.
That's true, but I think he's trying to explain why that's the case. Why does it have to be something which is normal? I think that's what he's trying to get at. He says, Asra Torah malacha, like as opposed to what? The Torah prohibited malacha as opposed to... Like why specifically this term malacha as opposed to what else? Yeah, there are 39 malachos. Like he could have just said, Rashi could have just said, it's normal to squeeze olives and grapes, and it's not normal to squeeze anything else, and so therefore it's not a malacha. He introduces it by saying Asra Torah malacha, that the Torah prohibited malacha. So I think what Rashi's getting at is that the Torah, he's trying to show how the activities that are prohibited on Shabbos are not just any activity, but it has to be an activity which is of importance and significant. That's what the term malacha refers to. It's something which is important. And so therefore, it's only important if it's something which is normal. Something which is normal and common at that time, so then that's an activity which is of significance. If it's not normal, so then it's... It weakens its significance because it's not common. So then it's a weaker activity. It's something which is not normally done. So even if for me, perhaps, well, we'll get to that in a second. But one could entertain that even for me, if it's normal, even for the rest of the world, it's not. So it's not a significant action because by the world standards, this is not viewed as a significant action. One could entertain such a possibility. And so I think that's what Rashi is getting at when he says Asra Torah Malacha. That he's focusing on the fact that the Torah didn't just say that random activities are prohibited. No, it's significant activities which are prohibited, and so therefore it has to be something which is normal.
So when something is common, would it not be done on an everyday basis? And when it's not common, it wouldn't necessarily be done on a daily basis. So I'm just trying to think. Maybe
I'm not sure if he has to say daily or...
I don't think he's referring to like a daily basis. He's referring to, is this something that most people would do?
Would most people do? I'm not sure, like, how, like...
Okay.
I don't know if it has to be, like, okay. I don't know if there has to be a time constraint on this.
Okay. The frequency doesn't seem to be material. When it's done, how is it done? And if it's not done that way, it's not a malacha.
Yeah, if it's not done that way, exactly. Yeah. It's a question of how it's done, when it's done.
Just to kind of clarify what this means, that it's... Common, not common, that makes it not a malacha. So let's say, you know, lighting fire. Everyone knows you can't light a fire on Shabbos. So the normal way to light a fire is to light wood on fire. So if I decide that instead of lighting wood, I'm going to light, you know, open up my fruit and vegetable drawer and light that on fire, so that wouldn't be a malacha, because that's not common. That's not the normal way to do it.
Aren't we just talking about squeezing in this case? We're not talking about that.
No, but he's asking, this is a principle which would apply to all the 39 forbidden activities. So he's asking, so let's take another example of a forbidden activity, like kindling a fire. So,
but that's not how, using the wood to maintain the fire, not to kindle it. No.
Well, let's say I have an existing flame, right? You know, I have my Shabbos candles that are lit, and I decide, I'll burn the house down. So that's not normal. Most people don't burn their houses down. So that would be okay.
Maybe it's just a darabon.
I don't think that would be okay. I'm trying.
This principle of how it's normally done only applies to squeezing, because like threshing,
but he's defining
doesn't make a difference, right? How you thresh. If the normal way to thresh is by shaking like that, but you shake it like that, even though it's not the usual way of threshing, you still can't do it.
Because you're using the same material. I mean, meaning the material is the wheat stalks. So it doesn't matter how I separate it. If I separate it by hitting it, or I separate it by stepping on it, or I separate it by banging it against the wall, all those things are, I'm doing a common activity of separating kernels from the stalk, right? That's what I'm really trying to get at, is like, when we said, does that mean that I'm doing something which is an uncommon activity, or I'm doing something which is a common activity in an uncommon way?
No, I think it's that I'm doing an uncommon activity. I think part of this is also depends on like the definition of that malacha, of that forbidden activity. Like by threshing, we pointed out it's not just, you know, revealing anything that's covered, but it's specifically a change. There's some change that's occurring. So it has to be a significant change. It goes from being a fruit to being a liquid. So that's viewed as a significant change. So I think if that, based on that definition, so if it's not a significant change, because...
But then that's not what Rashi says. Because Rashi says that what defines it as a malacha over here is not the fact that it makes a significant change or it doesn't make a significant change. What makes it a malacha is the fact that it's common versus uncommon. But Rashi is talking about dash. He happens to be generalizing it to the... To every malacha, but he has to be talking about dash here.
No, he is talking about dash.
He's saying the reason why it's not is because it's not common. It has nothing to do with making a change. Unless you add in an extra step and you say that the fact that it's common or uncommon here doesn't necessarily, is not the deciding factor. It's that because it's common to squeeze olives or grapes, therefore the juice has its own shame of this is grape juice. This is
yes,
wine.
I don't think that's what he's saying.
He also uses the lashon of drichot, which is stepping on it. Like if you would,
but that's what they would use. That's what they would do to get.
Maybe with other, maybe they would, even by.
In general, the way they would
step on oranges too. Like
it wasn't common to make orange juice.
That's what the wine press was.
The wine press was stepping. The wine press was that they used to step on it.
So they didn't used to do oranges, probably.
No, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't.
Just grapes and
grapes and olives. That's all that they did.
So other things that they were stepping on, not considered as malacha. So it's just the way that it's normally being done. Because you're not stepping on oranges.
Yeah.
You wouldn't look at it as a malacha.
It wouldn't be a malacha because it wasn't common.
Right.
What about taking olives or grapes, and instead of, he said, right, like he says, dricha, stepping on, what if you took them and threw them against the wall hard enough that the juice came out?
So this is part of a broader discussion where there is a concept called the shinui, when you change something, so then when you perform a forbidden activity in some sort of change, not normal way, so then it's no longer a biblical prohibition. So there's a whole discussion whether the change has to be in the action itself or in the result of that action. the best way of giving an example for this is, let's say turning on a light is a biblical prohibition, which I'm not saying it is. But let's say turning on a light is a biblical prohibition. So if I, the normal way to turn on a light is by having my hand turn on the switch. Let's say I were to use my elbow instead of my hand. So that is a change in my action, but it's not a change in the result. The result is going to be the same. That light is going to, you know, the whether I use my hand or my elbow is not going to have any impact on the end result. So does it have to be specifically a change? Is it a change in the action which creates an exemption, or is it a change in the result, or both, perhaps both?
What's an example of the other way?
An example of the other way where it's not a change in my action?
But a change in the result.
It would be like writing with your left hand?
Well, that potentially could be a change in action also.
I mean, that would be both. But
that would be both.
But there is over there a change in the result.
No, but that is a change in the result. Yeah, that is also a change in the result.
Well, why is it a change in the result?
Because if you're a righty and you write with your left hand, so then it's not...
So you're creating permanent text, permanent...
No, but you're right. Everything's permanent, but it's a change. It is a change in the result. You have a lot better handwriting if you're a righty using your right hand than using your left hand. Unless you're ambidextrous.
But you wouldn't think that the result of writing is defined by the quality of your handwriting. What if I write with my right hand but mess it up on purpose?
So perhaps that's also... I mean...
You know, if I write with my right hand but I just write with...
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking about, the same action...
That's defined as a different result.
With a different result. I think that would be a different result. It would have to be a significant different result. It's not like if I always have the same handwriting and I just make one small change... That's not of significance. This is an important discussion. This is a broader issue of how to understand shinuyim, changes in the action of forbidden activities, which it's important. But that's like it's a whole topic into itself. But it's a valid question. Going back to your question of what happens if I burn the house, so that. Burning a house is I don't know, I'm not even sure about burning a house. When you burn a house, you're burning wood. That's like
right, but you come up with something that's not normal to burn. There's a lot of things
so you can crayons are flammable. If you light a crayon on fire, who does that? But it's still burning.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Crayons are fun.
Yeah.
Okay. But if it's...
Right, exactly. You don't even know that they're flammable. Clearly, it's not a normal thing to do.
Well, I just haven't done it. But, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. So that Rashi's understanding as to why it only applies to olives and grapes, just in terms of this discussion, is because since it's not common, it's not under the... category of a malacha. Malacha means something which is of significance. If it's not normal, so then it's not as significant. That's the opinion of Rashi. Let's now get to the second opinion, the Ritva. The Ritva says, She'enu chayv min haTorah ela al drichas zeis v'anavim. Why? I'm only violating the biblical prohibition when I step on, when I squeeze grapes and olives. Derubam omdim l'schita. Because most of the time, olives and grapes are, you know, they're set for squeezing. Most when people plant zeisim and anavim, grapes and olives, so then it's for the purpose of getting their liquid, their juice, or oil. Aval shar peri derubam la'achila, but other fruit, where most of the time they're made to eat them as fruit and not for the liquid. Afilu kisachal l'hulamashka. Even if you personally go ahead and squeeze it for the juice, bala daito etzel rov ha'olam, your intention becomes nullified based on what the majority of the world does. The majority of the world just has it for the food itself and not for the liquid. You, in the times of the Gemara, you go ahead and you squeeze oranges when nobody else does it. You become nullified based on what most people do, and this is the key line, the last line. Velo chashiv mashke ela ochel. Velo chashiv mashke ela ochel. Means what? What's velo chashiv? It's not viewed as a liquid, but rather as a solid. What are we referring to here? I think we're referring to the liquid itself. The liquid itself is not viewed as a liquid, but rather as a solid. So what does that mean?
So it's identified by its finished products.
It's identified by its finished products. Since since most people make the orange for the orange and not for the juice in the times of the Gemara, so even if I squeeze the juice out, the juice is still viewed as a part of the orange. Because nobody drinks orange juice. It wasn't a thing. So if you see the juice of an orange when nobody has orange juice, so then you just view that as an extension of the orange. It's an extension of the orange. And so therefore when I squeeze it, I'm just separating food from food, which is not a problem. You specifically have to separate the liquid out of the food, out of the solid. Over here,
the reason for that is because that needs to be a significant change.
Yeah, that's something which we dealt with in the past. Yeah, that has to be a significant change. You have to take out the liquid from the solid. It has to change from being a solid for it to be a significant action. If it's just going from solid to solid.
Well, not necessarily, because by wheat stalks, it's going from solid to solid. It's still dash. It's that it has to take on a new.
Yeah, it has to take on a new name. Yeah.
This is just orange.
It never turned into the name of orange juice. It has to have a new name. It never took on that name of orange juice because since it wasn't common, so therefore no one would call this juice. They would just call this, squeezed oranges.
Orange.
Yeah. Something like that.
Wet oranges.
Wet oranges. Whatever you want to call it. So this explanation is very different from the first explanation. It's very different. According to the first explanation of Rashi, it has nothing to do with what we're going to call the liquid. It's not about calling the liquid something. It's just about the fact that anything which is not common is not viewed as a significant malacha, as a significant action. This explanation is saying that is saying a very different idea, that since it's not common, so therefore the liquid that comes out of the orange is viewed as part of the orange. It's viewed and it doesn't have its own identity. It's not its own identity. It's just viewed as part of the orange.
He starts off the same as Rashi. You could read it as being starting off the same as Rashi. He says, most of the grapes and olives are made for schita, for squeezing, but other fruits is not.
Yeah, I agree. The starting point for everybody is that the distinction between olives and grapes versus everything else is whether it's common or not. That is the starting point for everybody.
But you have to explain why common makes a difference.
For who?
In Rashi.
I think that's what he's trying to get at. Klomar Asra Tor Malacha. He's focusing on whether it's a Malacha. Does this fall under Malacha? This is very different than what the Ritva is saying. The Rashi is talking about, does something fall under a significant action of Malacha? The Ritva is saying a totally different idea. If the Rashi was saying like the Ritva, I would want him to say more. The Ritva says explicitly that it's not viewed. The liquid that comes out doesn't have its own identity. It's viewed as part of the solid. The next Rishon, the Ran, that we'll see here, the Achronim, the later commentaries, have a discussion as to what he means. It's unclear exactly what he means. It's pretty vague. He says, and this is one line that they argue about, Hayotze mehen, that which comes out of them, referring to all other fruit, lo chashev mashke, it's not viewed as a mashke lehischayev alav, to be a biblical prohibition. It's not lo chashev mashke. It's not viewed as a liquid. It's not viewed as a liquid. So what does that mean? It's not viewed as a liquid.
Because it wasn't initially intended that fruit to be squeezed into liquid.
So that's how one school of thought is to say like Dez, which is that it's similar to the previous explanation, that it's not viewed as liquid because since it wasn't common, so therefore it's just viewed as an extension of the orange. That's one way of looking at it. The Ran doesn't mention anything about it being normal or not normal, this opinion. The previous opinion mentioned the fact that other fruits are not normal. This is normal. So the Ran does not mention anything about it being normal or not normal. So you're right. It's possible that he's assuming that. He just doesn't tell that to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would be the other...
What would be the other explanation? So this is what you were saying earlier. I think this is what you were hinting to at earlier, which is that objectively, halacha views wine and oil as as significant liquids as opposed to other liquids. Not because it's normal or not normal. It has nothing to do with whether it's normal or not normal. It's just that wine and olive oil are viewed as significant liquids. What's my proof to this? This is a totally different topic, but with regards to tumma and tahara, purity and impurity, something that grows from the ground, in order for it to become tame, it has to have liquid that goes on it. It first has to have liquid that goes on it in order for it to become tame, to have the possibility of becoming impure. But it only applies to very specific liquids. It only applies to wine and to oil.
Seven liquids. I'd shut that down.
It comes to maybe wine and oil in terms of that comes from a fruit. I think it's wine and oil that comes from a fruit. It applies to others also, but I think wine and oil that comes from grapes and olives. But it doesn't apply anything else. It would not create an impact on the possibility of it becoming impure. That's like a totally outside example, but we see from there that wine and oil are viewed as different than Divash also.
It's Yad Shafadam. Yayin, Dam, Shemen, Chalav, Tal, Divash and Mayim.
Yeah, so Divash we discussed last week, on Monday or something. Divash is also, it's not extracted. That's what Avram Dov.
If Divash oak is boiled.
Something like it's boiled, it's not, I don't know, it's a little different. But in terms of that which comes, you squeeze it out of the fruit, so then that only applies to oil and to wine. So we see that these are viewed as halakhically more significant than other liquids. And also they were used in the Beis HaMikdash. So perhaps what the Ran is getting at is not about a distinction of whether something's common or not common, which is the basis for the distinction of the previous two explanations, but it has nothing to do with whether it's common or not common. He doesn't mention this idea of common or not common. The distinction is whether it is halakhically significant liquid or not halakhically significant liquid. And oil and wine are viewed as halakhically significant. What would be a ramification between these three ways, really, of looking at it, or the last two ways of looking at it? Just to review, what are the three ways before we get to the ramifications? Just to review the three ways of looking at it. Rashi says because it's uncommon, so therefore it's not viewed as a malacha. It doesn't fall into the category of malacha. The Ritva says because it's uncommon, so therefore the juice that comes out of it is not really have its own identity of orange juice, but it's really just the leftovers of the orange. It's not called orange juice. And this third way of looking at it is perhaps what the Ran is saying here, perhaps it's a dispute, is that just, no, there's, it's nothing to do with common versus uncommon. It's just that olives and, the oil and the wine are viewed as halakhically significant, more significant than any other liquid that comes out of a fruit. Yes?
So I think one difference would be is what happens if the times change and it becomes common.
So what happens if it becomes common? Excellent. So this is the major ramification. What happens if, like nowadays, where it becomes common? So according to the first two explanations, where it's based on this distinction, whether it's common or not, right? So now that it becomes common, so then it should change. It should turn into a biblical prohibition. Yeah. It should turn into a biblical prohibition. According to this last explanation, where it has nothing to do with whether it's common or uncommon, it just has to do with what halacha views as significant, as a significant liquid that comes out of fruit, so then it would still remain that it only applies on a biblical level to olives and to grapes, but it wouldn't apply to anything else. It wouldn't apply to anything else.
Who disputes the Ram in the
Ram? I think the Prima Gadam discusses it and the Eglei Tal. They have a discussion about this in the Ran.
They argue with each other?
I think it's a dispute between them. So that is a ramification. But let's say before it became common, before the stage where it became common, which essentially nowadays we're at a point where almost every single fruit is common to turn into a juice, right? Because of, you could get basically anything, even if they make the juice in another part of the world, everything gets exported and, right? You could get any type of juice that you want in Vancouver or in New York or anywhere.
Well, then what is the threshold for common?
Whatever it is, I think we've reached it.
Papaya juice is not objectively common, but it is a thing that you can buy in some specialty stores.
Yes, I think that would probably be enough. Well, we might get into it, but...
Rich uses the word rove, right? He says that by zesim v'anavim, by grapes and olives, the rubum omdim l'skita, most grapes are grown to be squeezed for the juice.
You're right, but...
Which is true by, say, oranges nowadays. The majority of oranges grown
is that
juice, not for consumption. Yeah, just... I remember reading it somewhere. It could be
really? Most oranges are made for the juice?
I remember reading somewhere. It was like 60% of oranges grown are for juice.
Yeah, certainly watermelons would not be like that.
Right.
Yeah, if it's based on rove, we're gonna see. I'm not sure how much time we're gonna spend on this, but there's also a discussion of, let's say there's one town in the world where the majority in that town, they do squeeze watermelons for the juice, but not anywhere else in the world. So, does that then make it a biblical prohibition for the rest of the world? Definitely for them.
It uses the word of butla daito etzel rova olam.
Yeah, so when it says rova olam, so what is...
Is that rova the town or rova
olam? It's very hard to say it's rova of the world because, you know, in the Ritva's time, you don't really know what's happening in the rest of the world.
Four or five blocks.
You know your town. You don't know.
In Medina El Mashe Haros, you can only paskin based on what you know. So, as far as I know.
I think you could read that as a phrase of saying that. That's a general phrase that's used. Batla daito etzel kola olam. That's
what I always assumed, was that it's the world.
But it's not. No, it's not so simple. Because it's clear that if you have one town, this is from the Gemara, if there's one town that's an exception and they squeeze their own fruit, nobody else in the world does it. So it's clear that for them there's a biblical prohibition. Certainly for them.
But that just could be because they're not aware of the precedent for the rest of the world. If you're from a different town and you're visiting there, maybe you're not allowed to do it.
If you're from a different town and you're visiting there...
From a different town where they don't squeeze this fruit, and you visit that one town where most people do, maybe you're not allowed to because you're aware of the precedent for the rest of the world, whereas the people in this town...
No, the people in the town, for the people in town, it's prohibited. For the rest of the world, it might not be.
Right. And if,
so...
Meaning, so if you're visiting there, you could do it, rather. Right. Sorry, did I get it backwards?
But you're saying...
The opposite case as well.
Well, right, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So that itself is a discussion. That itself is... We'll get to it in a minute, but that's always a discussion. So I'm not sure if rove is rove of the world or rove of that town. But before we get to all this, just let's say it's still totally uncommon to squeeze any other, to have any other juice. But let's say for myself, forget about everybody else. For me, I love squeezing watermelons to have the juice of the watermelon. That's what I do with all my watermelons. I'm different, it's not just my town, me personally. I'm the only person in the world who does this. So for me, is it a biblical prohibition or not? So it was clear from the Ritva, as our Lichman pointed out, that that wouldn't be the case. It's clear. The Ritva says that even if you want to have this for the liquid, what you want becomes batal to the rest of the world. It becomes nullified for the opinion of the rest of the world. Rashi argues.
So I don't get that. So you say you can do it or you can't do it?
It would not be a biblical prohibition. It might be rabbinic, but it would not be a biblical prohibition. So Rashi argues on that, and he says, if you personally want it for the liquid, so then there's a concept called achshavei. For you, it is viewed as something which is important. And he says it's a biblical prohibition. Achshavei means that for you, it's something of...
This is a different Rashi?
This is the next Rashi.
The next
Rashi, on the bottom of the page.
Oh, okay.
Kirv Chesta. Af agav dila alma lo chashiv. He's dealing with a different Gemara, but he says, even though for the rest of the world this is not something which is viewed as important or significant, kevin da'achshiv ihu havelididei mashke. Since for him, personally, it's something which is significant, so therefore it is called a liquid. Havelididei mashke. Kevin da'achshiv ihu havelididei mashke.
That doesn't fit with the first Rashi.
That it's about what's normal, right?
First Rashi didn't say anything about whether or not it's considered a mashke or not a mashke.
Yeah, it's, I was wondering about that also. It sounds more like the Ritzvah.
That's what I was trying to squeeze into Rashi.
Yeah, yeah. That's an important point. That is an important point. But there. There is a dispute between Rashi and the Ritva, if for you personally, if I want to do it, so then does this become a biblical prohibition or not? Even if nobody else wants to do it, for me, does it become a biblical prohibition? So that's an important dispute. Most poskim do not pass like Rashi to say it's a biblical prohibition. Most poskim pass in like the Ritva to say that it has to be based on most of the world. One second. Yeah, so let's get to the Shulchan Aruch. We'll get to some of the practical applications, but that's the basic outline of the different opinions. So the Shulchan Aruch is in Shin Chaf Aleph. This is on the second page. Zeisim v'anavim also l'sachlan. It's forbidden to squeeze grapes and olives. V'im yatzu me'atzman asurin afilu lo hayu omdim ela l'achila. There's a separate point. There's a separate rabbinic prohibition. Let's say the liquid came out on its own on Shabbos. If the liquid came out on its own, you didn't squeeze it, but let's say somebody else accidentally squeezed the liquid. So then you're not allowed to get benefit from it, from the juice or from the oil of the olives. That's a rabbinic prohibition because if you get benefit from it, so then you might go ahead and start squeeze some more. So therefore, it's a rabbinic prohibition. It's a separate point. V'tutim v'rimonim also l'sachtan. If you have tutim and rimonim, tutim are strawberries, right?
Yeah.
Strawberries and pomegranates. So it's forbidden to squeeze them. It's not a biblical prohibition, but it's only a rabbinic prohibition. And the reason for this is because even though this wasn't the majority, some people did do it. And because some people did do it, we're afraid that if you start squeezing those things, so then you're going to end up squeezing the olives and the grapes. So this also was a rabbinic prohibition, this the strawberries and the pomegranates. V'myatzu me'atzman, but if the liquid of these pomegranates and strawberries come out on their own, so then it depends. V'omdim la'achila mutar, v'omdim la'mashkim asar. If they were designated to be had as a fruit, so then you're allowed to get benefit from the liquid, because since it wasn't common to squeeze it, only some people did it. So the only time it's prohibited if the liquid already came out is if it was really designated for to squeeze it. Hmm. That's a separate point. And then in the end he says, "V'shar kol haperos mutter l'sachtan." With regards to all of the fruit, it's completely mutter to squeeze it out. You're able to squeeze all other fruit out. The Rama adds, and this is now important, "Ubamakum shenagu lishlot eza peros, lishdot meimav machmas tsamei otanog, dino ketutim v'rimonim, avlim nagu l'sachto l'rifu l'vad ein lachosh." So the Rama says that in a place, you have a town where it's common to squeeze those fruit because they're thirsty or because they just enjoy the taste, so then they have the status of tutim v'rimonim. In that town, they have the status of tutim v'rimonim, where it is a rabbinic prohibition. Avim nagdu l'sachtu l'refu levad ein lachosh.
That creates a heck of a practical problem. So if you find some juice from a pomegranate, before you can drink it, you've got to find out, was that pomegranate earmarked for juice or earmarked for fruit? Because only if it was earmarked for juice,
I think it, but
can you drink it?
But it's your pomegranate. So usually, in most cases, so you usually know whether you wanted to, what your intention was, whether you wanted to have it as a pomegranate or for the juice.
No, but now you've come to town.
It's Shabbos, right? And so,
Where do we see that it makes a difference what you want to do with it?
Im omdin la'achila, im omdin la'mashim. It's not.
You're in the Rama?
No, in the Shulchan Aruch. If it's designated for to eat, or if it's designated to drink?
If the liquid comes out, one can only use it if those fruits were meant to be eaten as a solid. But if they were not meant to be eaten as a solid, they're meant to be used for juice, then you can't drink it, presumably.
For liquid, yeah, that's correct. If it's for liquid, he says so explicitly. If it's designated to drink, so then it's forbidden to drink it. First of all, I'm not sure how common it is just to have liquid lying around.
Well, common enough that it's dealt with.
Yeah, it is dealt with.
It's talking about like when you have a bowl of fruit. So
yeah, you have a bowl of fruit, and then like it squeezes it down to the bottom, right?
I don't understand why they single out strawberries and pomegranates.
Because strawberries and pomegranates weren't the majority, but they were. There was a significant minority of people that were doing it.
Oh, I see.
So therefore, it turned into a rabbinic prohibition.
Okay.
So it itself is a rabbinic prohibition, and then if the liquid comes out by itself, mm-hmm. so then it's only forbidden to drink that liquid if we're afraid that you're going to end up squeezing more. And we're only afraid that you're going to squeeze more if it was designated for the liquid.
So that's like if you have a bowl of melon, right, and you serve it, and all the melon gets eaten. So on the bottom of the bowl, there's going to be some liquid that got squeezed out just from the weight of the other pieces of melon that were pressing down on it. So that melon, since it wasn't only to squeeze, I assume it wasn't only to squeeze, so that juice you would be able to, you want to drink that juice, you could.
Correct.
But it would be a problem if you had a bowl of grapes and there was some juice of grapes.
Grapes would be a different issue, because even if it's designated for the grapes, you would not be able to, correct. If you had a bowl of grapes and the grapes are pressing down on each other and on the bottom you have liquid, you would not be able to get benefit from that liquid.
But putting the grapes in the bowl where they're going to press down on each other, that's not a problem. You can put the grapes
in the bowl. Yeah, you can put the grapes in the bowl. You just can't benefit from the liquid. Yeah.
Even though you know that some juice might come out.
Anyways, but it's
not psychratia.
No, it's not psychratia. I don't think it's automatically going to happen. We'll get to some of these cases in a minute.
What you never actually performed an action that squeezed out the thing. You put them in the bowl, they squeezed out later. You can't say the psychratia, the action is exactly...
The action was putting them in the bowl, putting one on top of the other.
But there's no juice out of them. If you pull them right back out of the bowl, there's going to be no juice in there.
Yeah, but the action you performed...
Subsequent to that.
It might be grandma, maybe. Maybe. Anyway, so the Ramah says that if there's a certain place where... they make this. It's common for them to make the this liquid, even though it's not common for the rest of the world. So then it becomes a rabbinic prohibition for them. It becomes a rabbinic prohibition, and there's a discussion with maybe for the rest of the world also becomes a rabbinic prohibition. So this is on a rabbinic level. This is all on a rabbinic level that maybe for the rest of the world it should also be a rabbinic prohibition.
But you see that it doesn't become.
It does not biblical. Yes, that's important. Yes, maybe it goes based on the entire world.
So,
you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's one reason why it might not be biblical, because he's learning that it has to go based on the entire
possibly,
world.
Yeah, that's one reason. It might not be the only reason. Yeah, correct. I want to get to some practical cases, which are discussed. They discuss having a grapefruit with just having grapefruit.
When
was the last one? But the Shulchan Aruch says mutar lischot lemons. You're allowed to squeeze out lemons. So there's a discussion. Why is it that you're allowed to squeeze lemons? Why this should?
My guess would be that lemons was another fruit that was more commonly used for its juice than to eat.
Yeah, that's part of the question. Why would lemons be allowed? At least it should be a rabbinic prohibition. It should fall under this category, the second category of strawberries and...
You mentioned something last week.
Last Thursday, I think, yeah.
Last Thursday, about how lemon juice is not a juice, but it's like a tavlin, it's a spice.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons it's given. Mm. That is one of the reasons it's given.
No one really eats a lemon.
Yeah, so one of the reasons it's given is because it's really, it's... The juice itself doesn't have significance because it's purely for the spice. Although Rabbi Lechman pointed out that he has a student that has lemon juice.
Yeah, he eats lemons.
Just lemons. Okay.
But could it be that that's because, meaning, the same way that by when it comes to grapes and olives, the grapes are a food, the olives are a juice. when it comes to oranges, let's say, so the grapes are... When it comes to orange juice, so the juice is just a part of the orange, right? You just went from... You didn't go from solid to liquid. You went from solid really to solid. So could this be the reverse by lemons? That lemons, since nobody eats lemons, lemons by definition are just the juice.
It's a liquid.
So even when it's in a solid form, it's a liquid.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Mm-hmm. That's why it would be accepted.
Yeah.
The lemon is just a vessel for what you really want.
I think that is a second option. Yeah. I believe that's the second option, which I really didn't understand, so I didn't want to get into it until you mentioned it. But now that you mentioned it, it's a second option. Yeah. So one idea is that the liquid is insignificant because it's purely nobody has lemon juice by itself either. Lemon juice is just for something else. A second way of understanding it is that the lemon itself is not significant. Because nobody has a lemon by itself. It's really just for the juice, which then goes into something else. Mm. And the third explanation which is given is that the juice, this is what was in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, is that when the juice would always be squeezed into a solid. That was like the norm. Mm. That the lemon would be squeezed directly into a solid. Mm. And so therefore, just lemons became completely permissible. Based on that third reason,
you shouldn't be able to
squeeze lemons nowadays, unless you put it directly into a solid, because nowadays we have lemon juice. They first squeeze the lemons in the factory before it goes into a solid. They sell lemon juice. Lemon juice is sold in the store.
But since the intention of them when they squeeze it, is to go into a food.
Last week's discussion. So that requires it's a good point that we have, that you have to really get into. But that there's a significant time delay there also. So you have to know about that. So that's why some still say that that would be forbidden to squeeze lemons nowadays, even though the Shulchan Aruch says that it's allowed. The Mishnah Berurah says not to rely on the Shulchan Aruch.
Ah.
He says not to rely on the Shulchan Aruch.
Because the
Shulchan Aruch is wrong, but because...
Because
lemons now are squeezed into containers
for
the lemon juice. It's not like it always directly goes into a solid. It's not like the juice is always going directly into a solid. It used to be that at your home you would squeeze lemon, the juice would go into.
You didn't go to the store and buy lemon juice.
Yeah.
So if you wanted lemon juice, you took a lemon,
you squeezed it in your home and it went onto your fish.
That's all people did with it.
But nowadays, the lemon juice is sold in the store. So they squeeze lemons and it's just to put it into a container.
But the Shulchan Aruch didn't
that wasn't,
account for squeezing lemon into your tea?
So the Shulchan Aruch gave a whole bunch of different reasons. According to the other reasons, I'm not sure if he accounted for that or not. Uh-huh. But according to the other reasons, it would still be permissible because that's what we discussed last week also, which is one of the reasons that are given as to why it is permissible, which is that the juice is purely, it's just like a spice, so it's not significant. Mm-hmm. So that would also be why it's permissible to squeeze it into your tea. So the Mishnah Berurah says to be machmir. There are others who are mekel. There are those who.
So halacha l'maisa, if I want lemon juice, I just squeeze it directly onto my food.
Yeah,
or your
food.
Sugar.
Or the sugar before it goes in the tea.
Well, that's a dispute. That's what we had last week. That was a dispute. The Mishnah Berurah says that's allowed.
I never heard that. To squeeze the juice onto
You shouldn't squeeze. It's a dispute whether you're allowed to squeeze lemon directly into your tea.
Right. So if you're not, so how you get around that is squeezing it into the sugar.
Yeah.
And then put the sugar in the tea.
Well, that is also a dispute. But, but there's definitely room to be mekel. There's definitely room to be mekel. I mean, to squeeze it directly into the tea is a discussion. So now you're squeezing it into the sugar to put into your tea. So.
But if you've got it already in a bottle, pre-squeezed bottle, that you can squeeze straight into your tea.
Yeah, because that's not. That's only when you squeeze it out of the fruit.
Right.
That's definitely fine.
Now, several months
Except,
ago...
Except you might have problems with that, I don't know.
we had this discussion with Rabbi Weinberg many, many months ago. We were doing brachas with Rabbi Weinberg, and the topic came up that there were some countries that grow fruit specifically for the fruits, and other countries that grow fruit specifically for the juice of the fruit. And the bracha changes depending.
Yes.
Do you remember that discussion at all?
Yeah. Which? But that was Gemara. We weren't learning halacha.
Yeah.
Gemara is halacha.
Gemara is halacha.
It's a little bit harder to derive it.
Yeah. No, that's also important. Yeah. That's important.
It kind of factors into this because the intention of the country that where the fruit's being produced, it actually determines how we deal with that fruit.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure about here. When we say that it's potentially that could also impact it here. Let's just a few cases which they discuss practically, besides for this lemon case, is they discuss having grapefruit. To have grapefruit, what happens when you have grapefruit and you use a spoon for grapefruit? What's very common?
You get a lot of juice.
You get a lot of juice. A lot of the juice spills out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are you allowed to have grapefruit on Shabbos?
But that's just grapefruit. The juice is the grapefruit, according to one position.
What do you mean the juice is the grapefruit?
Well, it's not distinct. It's not significant.
Yeah, but
the juice is the extension of the grapefruit.
Yeah, but the general assumption now is that at least all fruit nowadays would at least be a rabbinic prohibition.
Uh-huh.
Because since it's so common to make grapefruit juice, it could be a significant minority.
Uh-huh.
Well,
what am I doing? Do I want to eat the grapefruit or do I want to derive the juice?
Oh, so what are you doing? So what are you doing? So they discuss maybe this is a psik ratio, that even if I want it for the grapefruit, it's automatically going to cause the juice to come out of the grapefruit.
Yeah.
We'll say that by a rabbinic prohibition.
Oh, so there are those there are many that are lenient because we would say by rabbinic prohibition, but this is really a lot of rabbinic prohibitions added up together, because it itself is a rabbinic prohibition, and we would call this a shinui, which is part of our earlier discussion. This is not the normal way to remove the liquid.
Two
rabbinic prohibitions.
Not two rabbinic prohibitions,
but two reasons why it is a rabbinic prohibition. And based on that, there are many who are lenient to say that it's fine, because even though it might automatically happen, it is something called trader abundant. There are two reasons why it's no longer a biblical prohibition. It would become a rabbinic prohibition. There are those who would be machmer, and they say even so that they are machmer.
Could you explain that idea that if there are two rabbinic prohibitions, it makes it more lenient?
It's not two rabbinic prohibitions. It's two reasons why it's not a biblical prohibition. Sorry. It's not two rabbinic prohibitions.
Got it.
It's two reasons why it's not a biblical prohibition. Okay. As opposed to one reason why it's not a biblical prohibition.
Yes.
There are those who say that even independent of these factors, we could be lenient, because when the liquid comes out, it's not pure liquid.
Right.
What else is in the liquid?
Pulp.
The pulp. You have the pulp in the liquid. So they want to claim that liquid is really still viewed as a solid liquid combo, which is then halachically.
Well, anytime. If you squeeze an orange, you're getting the orange.
If you actually juice an orange in a juicer, it has pulp in it as well.
So is that okay?
So I don't know. It's an interesting question, but that's what Rav Yashar is making based on that. He would have been machmir, but just based on this, the fact that the pulp also comes out with it, so therefore he's makel. So I'm not sure, but every single time you have pulp, but maybe is there more pulp in this case? Is there?
Have you ever put an orange in a juicer? You get quite all the pulpy.
They don't add pulp to the lots of pulp Tropicana orange juice. They just don't take it out.
Okay. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to deal with that.
Now, can you drink? So we're just talking about whether or not you can
eat the grapefruit and chops.
But can you drink the juice that came out?
Well, if you're allowed to do the action, you'd certainly be allowed to drink the juice. The only reason why it's forbidden to drink the juice is because we're afraid that you're going to end up doing the action. So if the action itself is allowed. I would think.
Isn't that two drabanans? When it comes to, why can't I drink the juice? Right? We said that if it's omed
to squeeze to for the juice.
Yeah, that but that that is you're right. That is two derabanans, but they might work off each other. Some may be like chad gzeri. You're asking your question, but they're all for the same purpose. That a shinui is not the reason why it's forbidden to have pomegranates is because we're afraid that they end up squeezing grapes.
Right.
And the reason why you're not allowed to have the juice is because we're afraid that you're going to squeeze the pomegranates, which is going to end up squeezing the grapes. It's all viewed as like one for the same common reason that ultimately you're going to end up squeezing the grapes. The concept of a shinui is different. It's a different type of derabanan. It's a derabanan where you're just doing it in an abnormal way. Anytime you do something in an abnormal way, it becomes a rabbinic prohibition.
So again, the case that...
We'll discuss this. Let me just finish this and we'll discuss this afterwards. They discuss, are you allowed to cut grapes on Shabbos?
Cook grapes.
Cut
grapes.
Sometimes, it's often if you have little kids, so
right.
You're afraid of... Right. They shouldn't have a whole grape.
Yeah.
So you often you cut the grapes. So you're allowed to cut grapes. What would be the problem with cutting grapes on Shabbos?
You're going to make juice.
Squeezing.
You're going to squeeze juice out. So, and the bigger problem with grapes is that it's not a rabbinic prohibition. Grapes are a biblical prohibition. Yeah. So it's an Isser D'Oraisa.
Uh-huh.
So you can't come on to the fact that it's a psik resha on two D'Rabbanans, that it's not your intention, but it's automatically going to happen on two D'Rabbanans. So, it's a dispute. The Lamed Tes Melachos, which is a famous sefer in Halacha, so he says that you shouldn't do it. He says you shouldn't do it. He says, but there is room to be mekel, but he says that you shouldn't do it. And there's another big sefer called the Orchel Shabbos, and he says that it's not. Who says that this is a psik resha? Psik resha is only when it's automatically going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not automatically going to happen that every single time you cut grapes, that juice comes out.
Depends how sharp your knife is.
Depends how sharp your knife is. Okay, I guess it's maybe.
Well, I mean, in theory, the sharper the knife, the less juice you'll have. But you'll always have something.
You'll always have something, but is it visible?
Well, your knife is going to be wet.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, that small amount that your knife is wet, is that viewed as significant enough? I guess that's the question. You'll have a minimal amount of juice that comes out. So I guess the question is whether that's viewed as enough.
So what should we do?
So,
what do I bring home? Do I bring good news or bad news?
So that itself is a dispute. Even the Lamed Tes Melachos, where he says it's forbidden, he says in the back, in the front it's in English, in the back it's in Hebrew. We're recording now, so that's one later. Okay. Okay, so that's basically it in terms of the halacha maaseh.